Hello and welcome to the Ether. Today is Tuesday, January 4th, 2022. This is part two of the two-part CeFi space, flipping through the charts with CeFi and friends. Let's take a listen.
All right, thanks a lot for that.
So, and always like with these central companies like Pipta.com, Voyager, like typically they'll have an incentive to advertise. So advertising goes a long way in terms of reach. So it's a central advertising play, in my view, when you think so. Like exchange tokens like this are like the presumption that, you know, a lot of normies want to use certain types of platforms, and this is sort of like the niche for that. But I do think that over the longer, like over the next year, I think it's going to be pretty successful, in my opinion. I think the max pain's basically over, in my view.
You just get them to let Luna be withdrawn. That would be great.
Yeah, they need to do that. Like, it doesn't make sense, too much sense to hold people hostage with coins whose primary utility is via, like, you know, actual staking and other functions. So anyway, you know, some of these sites, but, you know, just keep in mind, a lot of people leave their, like, they're leaving like wrapped Luna on Coinbase and not earning anything on it or, you know, whatsoever. So that's kind of interesting. There's all sorts of people that buy a lot of DeFi coins and who have no idea what they are, by the way. Like, you know, like a substantial portion of Coinbase buyers have no idea what they own, right? Like, you know it. You know they're not using external wallets. You know they're not, like, staking. So, yeah, unfortunately, right now, for the Luna holder, you're stuck on platform. Unless you just want to play the price action for some reason, then you could do so. Which I sometimes do. When there's a dump in Luna and I see like a bunch of my other coins, like on other exchanges have gone up, sometimes I'll rebalance into Luna and just do it. So I'll buy Luna even on Voyager sometimes for that reason, to just play that price action while the dump happens. But anyway, Inder, go ahead.
Veracity, VRA.
VRA, yeah, let me pull that up. I have some Veracity. It's also available on KuCoin.
And yep.
So let's see here. Yeah, and I did pretty much the same thing I usually do. I didn't buy VRA at a particularly very favorable time in terms of price. Like, I wasn't in it early or anything like that. So let's see here. When did I first start getting into it? So this is one I started getting into, I think, right around maybe November, December. So it's been in decline during that time, which, because it had already had a little bit of a run up, it actually broke out from a prior high around September. And then it broke out like by November, I think. Yeah, it went up, it kind of broke high, and then it kind of went to a Fibonacci extension by November. And then for some reason, it sort of stalled and it's been sort of sideways since then, and it broke down below. So that's kind of where it's been, and it's it doesn't look extraordinarily strong from a general like chart perspective at the moment. So it may have further downside, I'm not sure. Although it is kind of at a good volume support. So the highest volume level for VRA is the current price. So that's a good sign, I guess. But you know, I at this point, like the position that I have, I believe I bought it all the way to the very bottom. And then, I don't know, I'm not green in VRA at the moment. Let's put it that way. So I'm comfortable with buying more if it goes lower. That's kind of how I'm looking at it.
Interesting. Thank you. Yeah, it's got a unique, I mean, the use case seems amazing. The team looks good. Yeah, I haven't bought it yet, but yeah, I mean, someone recommended, so I thought I should check.
Yeah, I mean, it hasn't gotten like crushed to prices that are like super concerning or anything. It's just and I don't know what all the different like catalysts and hype around VRA actually are, so maybe like, and usually if there are specific news coming out or, you know, whatever for a coin, they'll tend to move after that. But the volume on VRA is pretty good, like overall the last, really, this whole year, volume has been much more than it was last year. So that's a good sign. And it doesn't seem to have a lot of signs of subsiding. So one thing you can imagine, like if you have a big peak and a drop and there's a lot of volume in this whole, you know, time period, the presumption is that there's people like me that bought these tops, let's say at 7 cents and started buying down. So when I see a huge volume spike, that implies to me that there's a whole bunch of new dip buyers out there, right? Like these are people that are like underwater, or, and there'll be some that'll just sell for a loss. Obviously they're like, oh, you know, damn, I bought the top and now it's down. Whereas I'll typically buy larger as the price goes down. But I look at those big volume spikes as like future buyers of the dip. And so the bigger, the higher the impulsive spikes or higher the big jump in prices, the better. Because that's a whole new generation of people that showed up because of whatever reason to go invest in that coin. That's kind of like the hype or FOMO cycle you think of. And you get a bigger FOMO cycle, by the way, if you have a lot of exchanges that these things are available on. So like, for, let me see, like on TradingView, it shows that it's on KuCoin, OKEx, Bittrex, Ascendex, and CoinEx, a bunch of little mini exchanges, really. Not a lot of people are on like Ascendex and whatnot, right? So the possible like buyer's market for this is relatively small. So that creates sort of a limit to how high these things can go. And I don't know how many exchanges and whatnot that VRA is going to be like appearing on. Maybe you have some insight into that. But these are the things you want to watch out for. If like it looks like they're executing and there's going to be a lot of new exchanges and whatnot, then it might do well. But that's kind of part of the curse of being early, is you don't know where these things are going to go, right? Like, and how well these teams are going to execute. And so these are things that, again, if you know, if projects like these and this size, like a lot of the ones we've talked about are actually really like what I call cycle one assets, or the very, like they've had their first major impulsive move and you're excited about it. These are the ones that I feel like you hear about them for some reason, right? Like they're not total nonsense, probably, because otherwise there wouldn't be that much hype about them. So there's some social consensus behind them. And then after that, I just sort of pack sort of like a little moon bag and say, okay, well, all right, like if I build a $1,000 position or whatever it is your size of moon bag is, and if this thing like 100x's, then I'll be pretty happy with it. And I'm just going to leave it and just see what happens, right? So when people talk about like investing in something that might go to zero, but that could also be really, really big, you know, it's not a bad idea to have tiny positions in those things, right? If you had early Shiba Inu or some shit, like you're a billionaire or whatever, right? So the concept is that, and that's for like total BS projects that are total memes. So if you think something has usefulness, it sometimes a bad idea to completely sell your entire position, even if you're ahead, and maybe hold on to a little bit and just like hide it so you don't look at it. Because there's this tendency, like when things jump, you do have this impulse to want to sell them and then buy something that's dropped that you like. Because that's what oftentimes happens. Like, oh, look, Luna's down. Do I really need Constellation? I have no idea what this thing does. Like I posted earlier today, I was like up 56%. And I'm like, ooh, that looks like a really good way to buy Luna right now. And I sold most of it and I left a tiny little bit just to monitor it again. And then I bought Luna with it, but, that's what happens when you have no conviction in something. You either should have like throw it on a ledger and throw it under your, you know, under your mattress or something and never look at it again. Or you should, like tie your hands up, because you'll have a tendency to sell these things when they go up. In other words, you won't make it to the 1,000x because like, you don't even know what the project does. So you're going to sell it prematurely. So anyway, Matus, see there.
Hey, CFI, thanks for hosting the space today.
Yeah, sure.
Have you played DeFi Kingdoms? What do you think of Jewel?
I haven't, but it seems like people are liking it. Have you messed with it yet?
Yes, I've played it a little bit. And, well, it's kind of fun. I've been gardening the whole time, which is basically doing liquidity pools.
Okay.
Between the Jewel token and Luna and then Harmony. It pays out crazy APRs of like 300%, but it's only the Jewel token.
Okay.
So I'm a little bit concerned about the tokenomics of it. A part of it is unlocked and a part of it is locked, but it seemed to be getting a lot of hype. That's why I asked.
Yeah, it's one of the guys that builds on it or develop, like is on the team, Flu has spoken to us a number of times and had some he was really like getting into details about it. I haven't played the thing. To me, DeFi itself is enough of a video game to then create another abstraction layer of a video game on top of this. It's not something I'm that interested in anymore. Like maybe I'm just getting old or something, but I can see how it would be appealing to people. I mean, it's like playing like, I guess, Farmville or like one of these like gold farming games that are all over, you know, all over the app stores and stuff. And then, but you kind of create like a whole DeFi element and a gaming structure to it, I guess. It might be a fun way for someone who doesn't maybe understand DeFi as much to kind of like get involved with it. Maybe that might be a fun way to learn it. Maybe. I don't know. You're making mega bucks on the token. Is that what it is or what? Jules, I think done well, right?
So yeah, first of all, it was shilled by a crowd that I kind of tend to believe. Let's say they're not like the shit crowd.
Okay.
So I bought about like $12-$14, but it wasn't a big bag of me because I didn't really know what it does. So well, first of all, I've earned like maybe 1% APR a day, and the tokens taking up like 5% every day. So I'm earning big bucks on it, but
by earning big position, are you selling the earnings or are you holding on to them somehow?
Yes, that's what I've been doing. So every single day I kind of unplug my rewards and try to sell them. So because I'm mega bullish on Luna, right? So
okay.
I want to hold as much money as possible in Luna, but in order to do liquidity pools, I have to own Jewel. So what I try to do is by selling all my rewards, try to bring my Jewel reward, my Jewel price to zero, and then kind of write it off, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think I understand. So it's like just any other LP, basically. You're trying to like use it to acquire what you want, but you're not like married to the Jewel token or whatever. Yeah, there's a lot of examples where the inflationary rewards tokens do not work out in your favor. I don't know. And I don't know the tokenomics of that particular system. I could be totally wrong. But like an example of a token that has had fairly high emission rates that's done really well is like Osmosis, right? Osm did really well, you know, compared to a lot of DeFi coins. But there's always this worry that like the inflation of those tokens is going to wind up just crushing you in any kind of massive dip. Because you have all these people ready to sell that token if it's, you know, if they're not, if there's no specific utility to it.
Yeah, so a part of the tokens and the liquidity pool rewards is vested and you can unlock it. And all of that starts in June 2022.
Mm.
And it will be vested like linearly. So honestly, I definitely expect to be out of it by then because it's going to be big dumps. Because right now you get like 1/3 of the rewards unlocked and the other parts are locked. So I think once the big unlocking part starts happening, we'll definitely dump.
Got it. And I don't think Jules, what's the ticker for it, by the way? Is it JEWEL?
It's JEWEL.
Yeah, I don't think it's on TradingView yet. So like I can't pull a chart up specific to it. It may not have, is it not listed on any major exchanges yet?
Give me a sec. I will check that right now.
Okay. Anyway, it's not on TradingView for the moment, so it's hard to tell. But Luna's price, by the way, as far as like probably an obvious question is like, okay, well, how far will it dip from the top? I think Luna's top was like around 102 or something like that. Let's just say 100 for making the math even. So we're right now at a 50% dip. And if there is a like an obvious place where there's like a volume gap here. Yeah, I think with Luna it's right at around 77 to 80 bucks is where there's like a volume profile gap. Where we haven't spent much time sort of filling in that space. So I think now, again, I have been getting Luna pretty much every day this last week. Anything less than like 90 bucks, I was kind of like scooping up. So I haven't been really waiting for, and I own already a lot of Luna, as you might imagine. So like, I'm not able to increase my percentage ownership by much by adding a little here and there. But I think I would, as far as like, if I'm going to go just complete, I would do this on, let's see. Yeah. Anything south of 80, and I'll probably go completely kind of crazy as far as like the amount of borrow power I use for this. Did I get cut off there, or I was kind of, there was a phone call coming to my phone. Did you guys hear all that, or?
No, there was a slight pause.
Slight pause. Okay. Yeah. Sorry about that. Yeah. So I was going to say, like, for Luna, I'd probably go berserk right in that 77 to 80 range if it was me. Which I will do if like, but I have a lot of anchor borrow in waiting that I haven't bothered with, but that's about the price where I think it's, looks about where I'll sort of really start attacking that hard. But it's, you know, really like I continue to grab it on any dips to some extent. I use some of like various rewards here and there as buys because I don't know. Ultimately, I think all of this is a relatively low price for Luna. There have been like, who is it? Like Soka or somebody like was posting the linear chart and making it look like, oh, like look how much Luna's gone up, guys, and oh, it's gonna crash down to, you know, and there's like a commenter that like, you know, thinks it's gonna go back down to like $20 or whatever. I'm like, dude, like some of these people have gotta be on drugs if they think any of us are gonna let the like coin price drop to 20 without like just scooping it up with massive anchor power. Like it's just it's kind of a little silly. Like so I think the odds of like Luna has had a very, very steady pace as it's gone up the last 6 months or so, with a fair amount of like volume for every price level, essentially. And as a result, it's developed like a base as it's gone up. And I think it hasn't had actually its big time parabolic move. So there's a couple of types of parabolic move. One is where you have a parabolic move on a linear chart, and literally like almost anything can look like parabolic on a linear chart. So it's just not that interesting. But on a logarithmic chart, a line, so if something goes up in a diagonal line, that already is actual, it's technically already parabolic on a linear chart. But when something goes up like vertical on a logarithmic chart, like for example, over the summer after the big crash, or Luna's jump from like pennies to $22, then it's you're basically going parabolic on a log chart. That hasn't happened again, which is very common in adoption level crypto in the last 6 months or so. So we've had essentially a cycle one top at $22. And then typically a cycle two top would be the next thing to happen. And it usually happens within about a year of the cycle one top. So if you look at a Bitcoin chart, it's a classic example of this. Look at Bitcoin in the first few years and you see how like, you know, it goes to like 100-ish and then it goes to 1,000 and does all that. That was a very classic adoption grade chart. And the reference to read on the subject is Philip Swift did a great article. I would definitely read this one. It's in the Medium, and it was called the Golden Ratio prediction of Bitcoin price, or something along those lines. And what it basically showed was that if you use 350-day moving averages and you do multiples of those, and this is what gets kind of weird, you do multiples, and they're typically based on the number pi, and it shows you in there how they're calculated. But the first cycle pump usually is the 350-day moving average times 21. So think about that, 350-day moving average times 21. And so in other words, it's way above the traditional moving average. And at some point, your price is going to get crushed after you reach that kind of crazy high that fast. So Luna basically just sort of came right up to about that at the pump from like pennies up to $22 or whatever that was. And we haven't actually seen the Luna second cycle move, which for adoption grade, like this is talking about like viral adoption level growth is what I'm talking about. We haven't seen that yet. And currently, so one of my charts that I created for TradingView, one of the indicators called like the Bitcoin 1D it has this Philip Swift's thing programmed into it so that you can like put it on any chart, really, not just Bitcoin's chart. And right now, the 250-day moving average times 21, which is unlikely to be hit twice, by the way, the 250-day average times 21 is sitting at around a trajectory of, well, it's at $560 right now. The 200-day moving average times 8, which is usually the cycle 2 top, has already reached $212. So if we were to assume that Terra has like adoption level growth, which it has demonstrated, and the reason why I say it's demonstrated it is, it's already hit the 350-day moving average times 21. An example of a coin that never hit the 250-day times 21 would be like Chainlink. So yeah, it had a pretty good pump from up to $20, but it wasn't at the extreme velocity of ultra adoption level growth. And actually, Luna hit this twice already. It hit the 350-day moving average 21 times 21 on February 9th, and again on March 15th to make it to $23.67. So it literally defied gravity twice already. And it hasn't made, since then, it hasn't done its typical, what they call pi cycle to move, which is to $220 at this point. Now, if we continue to climb slowly in price, like, for example, if we steadily get up to about 135, then the 250-day moving average times 8, by that point, will probably be north of like $800. So the slower, like the stepwise rises this year, the bigger and like more massive the top ends up being, because these like 350-day moving averages are rising as time goes on, and they're rising very fast too with the current pace of Luna's growth. So that's a good way to sort of describe that. And actually, I analyzed this for Tesla because, as you guys know, like Tesla has been on a hell of a tear as far as a stock is concerned. So I remember looking at this because one of my family members bought like a whole bunch of Tesla stock, and I was like, okay, well, what's this going to do? Is it going to like crash or what? And Tesla stock has never made it past the, let's see, 1, 2, 3. I've got to figure out which one this was. It got, I think, to the 250-day moving average times 3, and it did so in between 2013 and 14. It did so in, it's been riding the 250-day moving average times 3 as a top 1, 2, 3, 4 times over through 2021. And it hasn't reached that level of growth. So what I'm saying is like Terra's growth makes early Tesla growth look like literally nothing. Like that's the speed, the sheer velocity that we're moving. Let me like give you some other examples here. Let's pull up Apple real quick. Like just some mega growth companies and things are a good place to kind of like compare to with these multiples. And let me see here. Apple, let's see, has it ever done? Yeah, in the entire history of Apple, I think it only hit at most in terms of velocity. It tended to like maybe like hit the 350-day average times 1.8, I believe. That was about it. So, and you can see how much Apple grew over that time frame, right? Bitcoin, as Philip Swift sort of originally pointed out, is a really good example of this. It actually follows these cycles pretty well. And chart got sort of stuck here. Oh, there may be, it's on my phone. There may be too many calculations to do for that. Anyway, it's getting stuck. Long story short, Bitcoin hit cycle 1 and cycle 2 and hit all of these moving averages relatively cleanly in the early parts of its cycle. Now it seems to be going more sideways, and actually BTC is losing some velocity, which is concerning to me in terms of growth potential. I know the like BTC maxis don't want to hear that, but as far as like sort of adoption level growth, we're sort of behind actually on Bitcoin. I mentioned this before, not only by stock to flow ratio, we're starting to get behind, but also just on adoption level mathematics, we're getting a little bit behind for viral growth. So if we want to stay like the growth pace of the internet or Facebook or something like that, you have to keep, that growth has to really pick up fast from somewhere. So, and that's not to say, by the way, that Terra is going to grow this way for a solid 10 years and become the next Apple or whatever. I'm just saying that it's like from a growth trajectory perspective, its first cycle has behaved just like Bitcoin. And actually in a shorter time period than Bitcoin, this is about half the time to get to cycle one compared to BTC, right? So that's actually very exciting. And it actually hit, it double topped on the cycle in two different spots all the way on the way up to $21. So it's really, really crazy aggressive. And I think the weird tokenomics of Luna make it more possible for it to reach these kinds of mathematics, even so more so than Bitcoin and Ethereum by like orders of magnitude. So when Philip Rudd put out that article today about the kinds of like growth patterns that you could see, I think they bear out in the current trajectory of Luna compared to most other projects in the world. Actually, let me pull up Solana real quick on that and see if my phone will work here. See what it did on the, So Solana's first move was to the 350-day moving average times 8. It actually has not been able to make it to the 350-day times 21. So its actual velocity is one major order of magnitude lower. I know Solana's market cap is higher at the moment, but in terms of just velocity and trajectory, now that could simply mean that Solana is going to make its move to that level, and we just haven't seen it yet, which is certainly possible if they can keep themselves from being shut down by DDoS attacks every 5 minutes, it seems like these days. Not to sort of throw too much shade on Solana here, but all right, let's see. So it's Solana's 350-day moving average times 21 would have to put Solana at well over $2,000. And it would have to make some major moves to get there still. So that just gives you a reference point of how much faster velocity that Terra has compared to other projects. In fact, let me pull up Avalanche too, because that had a really wicked rise. And I think this has to do with the fact that, like, to some extent, people realize that, like, L1s are sort of a big thing. And so things got adopted quicker. Yeah, even Avalanche, it reached its really only, I think, 350-day moving average times 5 at $150. So, yeah, also not the same velocity.
Kind of, in a sense, it's showing like the holder conviction and whether it's like organic growth or whether it's hype.
Yeah, well, it takes a serious like adoption level hype pump to get to a 350-day moving average times 21. And remember, to get a 350-day moving average times 21, it can't be just a simple pump like it opened today and then like it pumps, right? It's got to be something with a 350-day price history, right? Mm-hmm. Like the chart doesn't even start drawing the lines until you start seeing, you start getting there. There was another one I was looking at HTR Hathor was an example. And I was curious about that one because it had a neat chart pattern. I was like, okay, where is it now? And it just started drawing its 350-day moving average lines just like in December because it didn't have enough price history before then. So currently its 350-day moving average times 21 is currently sitting at about $20. And the current price of Hathor was $2. So, and it's about to finish a cup and handle breakout. So like, it wouldn't be surprising at all to me if HTR like did a good solid, at least 3X from here, if not do like a crazy, you know, 10X from here. Now again, that's all remains to be seen because you don't know that it's going to have that level of adoption, right? Or that level of sort of hype and attraction, but it has had enough time go by, I guess, to start, like enough price history over the course of, you know, 300, at least 350 days to have an actual, to develop this. So, and cause anything can have a very high velocity in the first week, right? Like a bunch of people pump something, you can go up a million X. That doesn't mean it means anything. Like you have to have substantial price history to make like adoption level, arguments as far as viral growth, right? So that's kind of how you should look at that. But Yeah, so there are only a few. So HTR at least is making progress in the right direction. And I don't even know the project that well. I just know the chart looks pretty awesome right now. So I just sort of like threw some anchor borrow at it, and we'll see what happens.
Did you guys talk about Harmony yet? I was gone for a second.
No, actually, just kind of like the chart and how it looks.
One token, or one.
I don't own any one, by the way, so I don't follow it as close. But
you should grab a watch bag.
I probably should. And one of the reasons to have a watch bag of one is that it did in fact hit its 350-day times 21. It did that at a price of 21 cents back in March, and right now it is at 31.5 cents, which is not that much higher than that breakout level. So it's
and it's right below its previous all time high.
Exactly. So it actually is going to make. So if it were to get to its 350-day moving average times 8, which is like the next sort of Pi cycle 2 pop, you're talking about that already is at $1.14, and the current price is 31 cents. So you're talking about a 4X from here. Not a bad risk play, actually. Yeah, one looks pretty solid, both in just overall chart pattern, but also in adoption math. Sort of like
it's had a long accumulation period too. From someone who's I trade on gut personally, and like Harmony has had quite a while of it. Had like an unlock period here, and like you could tell it was like suppressed for a while because there was like a liquidity unlock, and it's like recovered. Yeah, so I think it's
Binance actually Binance has them going back as far back as like summer of 2019. So it's got a pretty substantial price history on it, and it didn't have its actual cycle one.
I didn't even know it was that old.
It didn't have its cycle one super pump until the same time that Luna did, and it did just as well as Luna did as far as like top.
And they're playing nicely with Luna too. That's like originally that was why I held someone, was because of the Terra Bridge.
it doesn't look bad right now. I mean, I don't know too much about what's happening on Harmony right now. As far as like what are the price drivers for it to sort of go crazy? I don't know.
Not enough.
But if you were to ask me which is more likely to do a cycle two like mega move, is it gonna be Terra doubling or is it Harmony doing a 4X? I'm guessing it's probably still Terra doing well. I took that back. I take that back. If you're talking about ROI, if you're talking about like, okay, 2X on either one, they're probably about equivalent. If you think about it, because for Harmony to reach the same level Terra has, it still has to do a 4X in terms of the
it's pretty small
in terms of the like moving average multiples concept. So if you believe it's a solid project, then now it doesn't seem to have the as much volume as it did back in October or back in March. So it's sort of like dwindling volume. So I don't know what kind of catalysts are coming, but on the flip side, Terra's volume is very consistent, actually. Like, there is just as much volume now as there has been, like, I don't know. There is no drop in average value whatsoever on Terra.
Is there any other project doing that with consistent volume for, like, long periods right now? Because a lot of them, even, like, Ethereum, like, is pretty down.
Let me see. Let me look at ETH as an example. Yeah, I mean, like this. Wait, let me make sure I have the right exchange here and find a high liquid chart.
It's almost got like an artificial volume too. It's hard to gauge.
Yeah, ETH volume does not look good right now. And not only that, but it's been falling in terms of its moving average multiples. And it's like, it's, I don't know. It looks kind of messy to me. Like
pretty much every chart except for Terra is following the ETH chart. If you look in some like scale or form.
Yeah. So like this is the thing. This is why like I have not done ultra speculation on outside of Terra too much. Outside of like a few sort of like charts that look like a good like short term gamble, I would say. And by gamble, I really mean gamble. But like the ETH chart. Yeah, it doesn't look so hot. I don't know. Sometimes it can be hard to tell. But I think ETH's velocity probably is because a lot of new users aren't showing up, because who the hell wants to pay those fees if you're brand new, right? Like any normal person doesn't want to pay those kind of fees.
I don't know. I wonder about that, because the scaling solutions are all like scaling. Like it's like, you know, very few people I think are actually using the ETH chain. Oh, yeah, so I wonder about that. I don't know.
And, you know, but some of it too is like, if you think about it, you, like the general public who just buys ETH and sticks it in a wallet, whatever, they don't necessarily plan on participating either. So I think what's interesting about Terra that's specific is I think there's a substantial portion of like the heavy users are actually participating in the system, which is probably why it's growing.
Like a black hole for intelligence and talent. Like everyone I know who gets into it starts like obsessing over it.
Yeah. So, right. So the tokenomics are that interesting and that it sort of sucks you in and go like, wow, this is the problem. Like I can see Harmony's chart and I can see why I might want to get some, but am I going to go like heavy conviction? Like I'm with Terra necessarily. I don't think so. That's the problem. You see,
that draws energy from maximizing Terra.
Exactly. It draws energy. Exactly. Right. So yeah, King, go ahead.
I was wondering, what about Phantom PM?
Oh yeah, let me pull that one up.
I'm gonna hold back on this one.
Yeah, I had some Phantom that I held through this last month, and today I probably shouldn't have, but I sold it in favor of Luna just now, like this afternoon.
I did the same thing today. I dumped like most of my I dumped like 95% of my Phantom today.
Well, good news for Phantom, it did actually. The date was, yeah, again, in March, similar to when Terra popped. It did hit its 358 times 21. And then it also had a little, it actually jumped all the way to its 350-day times 8 already. So it's actually had a sort of cycle to, it actually hit its cycle to top twice already.
It had a massive run up from a conference, also is very visible in the price chart.
Yeah, so actually it's already hit its like 350-day moving average times 8. So in theory, if it's on cycle 3 already, you could see some sideways action on this sucker a lot longer than you might think. Like everyone's making it sound like it's like going to be like it's Phantom time, you know, like it's like
all I know is I've paid 1.5 to 2 Phantom for transactions. And if Phantom hits $20 this year, you guys can do the math. That's all I know.
Yeah. Right. It doesn't make sense at some point, but yeah, I don't know. It's it has had very good velocity up until now. But coins doing a repeat of their like, to hit the 350-day moving average times 21 quickly again is almost impossible for almost any asset known to man. I'm like, I'm not kidding. I've looked at this golden ratio thing after I like coded it for the indicator, and just for like shits and giggles, I like punched in a bunch of like companies I thought were interesting to see like how they performed on it versus Bitcoin. And it is not easy to beat Bitcoin. Let's start with that. For any asset on planet Earth. So
literally impossible.
For some of these to like be doing this, like Phantom, like Terra, and hitting these numbers, like even after a 350-day period of consolidation and such is very impressive. So they are representing, like Phantom also is representing adoption level activity. But again, I don't play enough in that ecosystem. I know people that use it love it. So I
use it all the time. I don't love it.
You don't love it? What do you not love about it?
Absolutely not. Well, I mean, so the biggest problem, like we've talked about a lot, is on volume. Like most networks, this is not like symptomatic of Phantom. Like on volume, the transaction fees go up. So you end up with the really crappy user experience of like right when you have to make transactions, you're just getting like robbed. Like I've paid over one Phantom for like a swap on that network, like when it's really when there's like a ton of crazy volume. And that's you can do the math.
Yeah, and you know, it's when times of chaos is when you want to actually use the network, right? Because it's,
yeah, and if you're leveraging, you have to, like you're stuck doing it, and so yeah, it's just like it's horrible. So
you're getting double screwed essentially while you're doing it. You're already kind of irritated, now you're just like doubly soaked.
Yeah, you're getting wiped out and you're having to spend more while you do it, and it's just like not a fun experience on any network.
Yeah, really. No, that makes sense. I think that's, again, we've talked about this a bit, is like a lot of things can pump with a lot of hype and a lot of interest early on. Whether they can maintain that over a decade or more is a wholly different thing, right? And even BTC, after a lot of time goes by, it's got competition in the form of lots of other crypto and activities going on. ETH is the same story. And maybe Terra doesn't last. Maybe it's going to have its heyday for a period of time, and then you know, lots of other new interesting things come out. Who the hell knows?
There's a ton of VC activity on Phantom too. So keep that in mind.
Oh, I see. I see. Yeah, you mean
like massive amounts, like to rival AVAX, probably.
So they can basically do lots of advertising and such. You're saying?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they will. They'll tell you that they didn't do that, and all the money went to the devs. But like, you know, think what you want.
Exactly. Well, there's the incentive to push. Like, and if you're a token owner, you would want the network to get bigger. So I'd hope that all those VCs and shit do a bunch of advertising if you think about it, right? Like why wouldn't you want them to pump it?
Yeah, there's kind of a notion on that network that like I won't say names, but like there's a certain person who literally like there's a joke because he's going to come save any project that screws up too badly, like with his own money, because he's that into the network. And it's happened like multiple times. Like it's a true thing that occurs. So like that's
it's like
positive.
It's like quasi.
People pitch that like, oh yeah, like it's a, you should buy it because like this guy will save a project. Like that's not a positive.
Yeah. It's like quasi decentralized is what you're saying. It's like there's this like savior in
it's
the background.
Exactly that. Yeah, it is exactly quasi decentralized.
Interesting. Well, yeah, I mean, I think these, so if you, it's worth looking at that article the golden ratios by Philip Swift. And basically what it essentially shows is that human beings, when acting in a sort of like viral spread behavior, there's a representative sort of like price action behavior that goes with that. And it's like a kind of a fractal of the circle, sort of a circle, actually. It's why it's called pi cycles. And and each cycle actually is, there's a moving average cross called a pi cycle cross, and it's actually different for each cycle. I noticed one of the people that was talking about this a lot was, what's the guy on YouTube?
Was it Tech Dev? There's like a bunch of people talk about pi cycle tops constantly now because there's nothing left.
Yeah, there's nothing left. BTC actually had like negative crosses on that cycle indicator twice, actually, and Bitcoin still kept going up. So actually, it was only somewhat accurate. And the one thing that people were not doing correctly was they weren't actually using the article correctly. Like they were using the same cycle top for each cycle, like the previous year's cycle. Like, so the, in other words, the conceptually what happens is, oh man, what's the guy's name? It's on YouTube. You know, the nerdy looking physicist guy, you know what I'm talking about? Shit. He's got a pretty popular,
Tyson.
He's the guy that does the moving average bands. And I think, I don't know. He does Bitcoin a lot.
He's in Hawking.
What's that?
Stephen Hawking?
No. No, I can't remember. Anyway, whatever. The point is the pi cycle concept, I'm not sure everyone's like looking at the same thing when they're actually analyzing it in terms of the way that Philip Swift's article put it together and like how you would consider like picking tops and such. And it's only, and those models only work until they don't, obviously. That's a different thing. But the basic principle behind it is, with each major impulsive like move of a coin, as time goes on, it's harder and harder to reach those mega high ROIs, right? Like, so with Luna, like if you're in Luna OG and you bought it in at like under $1 and you are in it now, and or you rode up the top to $22, right, at that time, it's very hard to replicate that level of success. Unless you are like a literal OG in a super project that's gonna blow up like crazy, it's very difficult to replicate that experience, like just by like finding something early, right? Like you just have to have a little bit of luck and some conviction in the project and all that. The second time it happens is like the 350 day moving average times 8. That price could very much be higher than the previous top, but the percentage ROI is not as high. That's the difference, right? So if you're a new buyer at those new levels, like, you know, you're not going to make as much. If you bought Bitcoin at 2 cents and you wrote it up to like cycle one at $100 or whatever it was, then you did really, really well. But if you bought
this Bitcoin, is what's so hard to understand also about like for new traders, this is like so hard to like wrap your head around when it's occurring.
Yes. Exactly. And when you buy Bitcoin at 3,000 and you make it to like 45K, it's still not as big of an ROI as had you been in it like at pennies, right? So this like ROI problem, you know, and you see it with like stocks and blue chips and stuff. Like you're not going to expect, like if you're an Apple investor today, you're not going to expect a, you know, 100x return or whatever. It's just not feasible. Because you've already saturated that market and you've found all of your buyers and all of that that you're ever going to find on this earth. And each time, like the cycles get longer and they get less ROI. So that much is true. There's no obvious reason to believe like you're going to have BTC head off to a 10 trillion market cap by next week, for example. There's a time involved, and that's just going to be a reality of the universe. Unless you can go and find like, you know, a bunch of countries are going to ape into it all at once, right? Like, which, why would they do this? Because they're going to end up causing their own slippage. So that becomes a problem. You're just pumping someone else's bags at that point, right? So that's what poses some
problem. Do you think they actually understand this? Like that way you just said, because I've thought about this. Do you think that like sovereign or whoever, do you think that institutional money understands that?
Oh, yeah, slippage sure. Thing? Yeah, sure. I mean, like even for that matter, like Terra, for example, if TFL, like I mentioned this many times, like if TFL holds a lot of the coins, right? Like, why would me, like if I own, I don't know, like, you know, I'm Apple or something, and I come in and I said, well, I'm going to buy some portion of like Terra assets for my, you know, for Luna, for our treasury or something like that as an investor, then I have to face the possible, like, number one, me as a big company showing up or a country showing up, it's going to pump the price of this thing for sure, right? So you have to buy it before you pump it. And on top of that, you know, if you're buying enough of it, you're actually causing your own slippage at some point. So that creates a separate problem. So it just depends on how much money you're talking about. But if you're the sovereign wealth fund of a country and you're going to go in all in Bitcoin for some reason, like there's got to be a method to how you're going to get that to happen without causing, like just making it more expensive for yourself. Like, and if you're like, okay, well, I'm the sovereign wealth fund of Saudi Arabia, what's to keep the Winklevi from dumping on my ass at some point, right? Like, right. There's nothing preventing that. So I would have to take that.
I'm waiting for the first country to just market by like $18 billion, like by mistake.
Yeah, they're just going to show up on Binance and, you know, like, hey, get me $18 billion of
like, yeah, every Bitcoin just got bought that's available on an exchange.
Yeah, all at one time. Yeah, that's just those kind of weird situations are what are going to keep like, if you know, mega type funds, you know. But that's why it took so long, though. Now that BTC, like if you get it to like a, you know, gold size $10 trillion market cap where almost anyone can get in without causing slippage, at least any non-US country, right? Like, you know, like the United States government is spending trillions on stimulus and this and that, right? Like if they wanted to buy Bitcoin, like in any serious quantity, like what does $1 trillion do, right? It just makes it go to Bitcoin, go to infinity, essentially. So that doesn't work. So, you know, like this is the problem. So like it has to reach a certain market cap. Probably like once you reach like a 10 trillion gold market size market cap, then you could get really like sovereign wealth funds to say, I'm going to like really use as a store of value. That's not to say that some of those funds are not already buying Bitcoin in small quantities and like El Salvador or whatever. Who knows how many countries are sort of doing it. But yeah, this is a problem for any investor, for any coin. If you're not an original VC, you know, like good example would be anybody in their, you know, anybody today could go and start a Tendermint based crypto, right? Like let's say you're Saudi Arabia or I don't know, some, just pick a country. And they have like sovereign wealth funds of huge amounts of money, and they have lots of liquid cash that they can use with oil reserves and God knows what else, right? So you could basically say, well, here I am. Am I going to go buy your Bitcoin, or I'm just going to start my own little Saudi cryptocurrency? Like you can basically do that for nearly free by going to Tendermint, just cloning. Hell, you could just clone Terra if you want for all intents and purposes, tokenomics and all. And you could say, I'm going to call this the Saudi coin, and I'm going to like just fund all the validators. And yeah, it's centralized, but fuck it, who cares? Like the average person doesn't care. We're going to run this, right? So then they're the initial investor and any growth that happens because of liquidity that comes in from externally pumps their bags. Why in the holy hell would you want to own Bitcoin at that point when you can just print a money machine like that, right? You follow what I'm saying? Like, there's no obvious incentive to not do what I'm saying, essentially. And that's why there's some investigation into CBDCs and how they, like, different countries want to do that and use them as a traditional treasury instrument as opposed to just like a pump and dump type of.
This is also, by the way, why decentralization allows this massive shift of wealth, because it allows, like, people with less money that are more maneuverable to have an advantage before the big money can move in.
Sure, exactly. And that's one argument that, like, for Bitcoin, let's say, maybe not a con argument, but it also could mean that maybe, like, a lot of sovereigns don't want to be involved with Bitcoin, and maybe that's better for Bitcoiners, you know, like, you don't just leave those people out of it. And be done with it, right? Like, maybe it's better. I don't know. I'm not sure. So it's all sorts of, like, philosophical arguments could come in. But yeah, but either way, like, I think these growth patterns and these adoption level growth type behaviors can only be seen in certain coins, in certain companies, in certain sort of, like, technologies. And probably you get, you know, one of these types of technologies every generation. So there was the smartphone, of course, and many people got rich with Apple and Google and such. Then there's, you know, Bitcoin, and then there's, you know, DeFi. And clearly there's going to be, like, ridiculous amounts of money made in the robotics and artificial intelligence space. I've spoken on this a lot. I think, like, AI is sort of like the last industry, right? Like, it's like the final thing, the pure power of thought, and, like, makes almost everything else meaningless. This is the problem. This is the other problem I think is very concerning to me, and it's always has been. It's like the power of thought is actually a more powerful proof of work than anything Bitcoin does. So essentially, AI essentially implies that Bitcoin goes to zero, like literal zero. So any serious enough machine learning application will occupy the last of all of the computational
power. As soon as they invent the most effective trade bot ever, that's perfect. That's the end of civilization as we know it, and we all die. That's it.
Sort of. Yeah. I mean, like, you get to a point where, so, like, if the number one reason for computational power ends up not being all the other shenanigans we talk about, like metaverses and bullshit, but it's really just straight up, like ML, AI, neural network, computational power, then what happens is that, like, entire militaries, entire countries will basically, like, counterattack any method to take silicon production away from that activity, right? Like, the incentive, because those systems are so powerful and so they're so easy to militarize, and they're so, like, you know, necessary, because once you basically have machine language, artificial intelligence warfare, you have the counter problem of your country having to sort of combat that.
In a defensive way. I mean, trade was the dawn of civilization, so why shouldn't it be the end of civilization, right?
Yeah, or something like that. Yeah. So my concern is for crypto would be that, like, the crypto space, which doesn't fully end up having some system that is ultimately compatible with ML neural network, sort of the economy that is built around that, becomes obsolete no matter how you look at it. Like, there's no way to avoid that end result. Because the silicon and the computational power and everything goes, like, it automatically drives in that direction at that point.
At which point robots eat us alive.
Yeah, which is actually a pretty good concern now. I mean, like, what robotics are capable of doing now is nothing short of, like, I mean, like, I would say,
oh, literally, like, happening now.
Yeah, like, right now, if you look at the I don't know, pick your worst possible, like, outcome in terms of, like, an AI movie, you know, like Terminator or something. The reality is there's not anything that is done in those movies as far as, like, death and destruction that's not fully capable right now.
Except for when they missed.
What's that? When they what?
Except for when they missed. When the robots missed when they were shooting.
Yeah, the robot missing. Yeah, no. Like, if you watch the robots that are in action right now, no, they're not missing. like they could, you know, a fairly decently built bot can essentially take out, like, I don't know, probably a shit, like a pretty small stadium of people. Like, you're not going to stop it. There's just no chance.
Like, it's gonna be so sad when there's a militia. Like, let's get them.
Let's get them. Yeah. No. So, like, this is going to be an interesting dilemma. Whereas the size and scale of, like, ridiculous weapons, you know, like it's not as easy to control as, say, like nuclear weapon technology and things of that nature, because you're resource constrained by uranium and whatnot. And even then, you're not sure who the hell has weapons, right? But yeah, the whole AI space and the robotic space coming together, I don't know. There's just, I can think of too many permutations to wreck the world, and only a few where it comes out okay. So I think.
But then again, we're all here, right? On a more positive note.
Yeah, we've made it so far. but no, I think there is an element of, like, Geneva Convention type activity that has to happen along that space. You know, from the angle. So, like, that's the other weird thing is, like, crypto actually makes it more likely for that to be dangerous. And the reason for that is because, to some extent, like, regulations exist for a reason, obviously, where, you know, yeah, you pay your taxes, blah, blah, blah. But the funneling of money to various places, especially when it comes to a relatively modest sums of money that can create relatively destructive robotics, relatively highly available pretty soon, you know, neural network computational power, you can create all sorts of wicked things that that no one's going to be able to really control, that can cause attacks on relatively, like, ugly scales. And it doesn't require an extraordinary amount of imagination to build these things, which is kind of concerning. So, the off-the-shelf capabilities as far as, like, destruction.
All you have to do is convince a kid it's a video game and they'll build you some crazy shit.
Yeah, right. That's true. Yeah, that's the funny thing about AI is, like, it can convince you to build what it needs, right? Like, if you look at what's happening now in blockchain, right, people are trying to build, heck, like, Doe talked about it, right? He's trying to, like, democratize labor so that, like, programmers and such can find work, right? And they can find it, like, in a centralized marketplace. Okay, I want you, Rust programmer, to build me this, this, and this, and I'll pay you this, this, and this, right? But a lot of these kind of computational Lego blocks, you may not know what you're building, actually, right? Like, you could have developer A building this component and developer B doing that component and shit. Like, it could be DARPA, like, you know, posting these tasks to people, like, you know, you're building these little micro computational things to do little things, and you're thinking, oh, it's going to be just fine, but actually it's like the eyeball to the laser that, you know, of the Death Star or whatever, you know. So you just don't realize what you're even making. It's a fascinating like, kind of situation we're in, and like, the intersection of that and crypto, I've been kind of watching, like, some of the like, projects like Internet Computer and Akash with decentralized cloud and Filecoin and all these kind of, like, systems, like, where they're trying to build utility tokens around some sort of computational activity, cloud compute capacity, file storage space, you name it, right? Rendering capacity, like we talked about render a bit. Like, once you sort of add all these things together, right, you could create, like, a person could be sitting somewhere in their mother's basement building all sorts of wicked shit.
It's Optimus Prime.
Yeah, and you have no way of really tracking who's building Optimus Prime for you, right? Like, you have no way until the dude wakes up and kind of, like, you know, is walking around.
So he's like, holy shit, it's Optimus Prime, we're dead.
It's Devastator. Yeah, it's like the but yeah, like, the these decentralized computational activities can be very, very interesting. But I think in particular, where neural network computational power can be interesting in the crypto space is, like, if the more you're able to build neural networks that can sort of watch human behavior, like, for example, monitoring, like, Twitter activity, monitoring YouTube comments for, you know, statements about, like, a coin or whatever. And those things are already out there. There's literal control rooms of crypto trader nerds that are sitting there with, like, huge amounts of money with lots of screens, lot of employees who, like, I mean, I don't know how many employees Galaxy Digital or whatever has, but if you have some kind of active trading house going on, right, you're watching all these social metrics. And you're like, oh, all these idiots are talking about QRDO. Fuck it, let's get in, right? Like, you don't think those people are aping in using that those techniques. And the more computational inputs you put into a neural network, the faster it can, like, learn human behaviors and human behavioral patterns. So, like, if you look at how Google DeepMind's MuZero handles, like, learning the game of StarCraft, learning it learned all the Atari games just by watching them and, like, beat all of them without any, like, learning any rules. It learned how to beat all the world's players in chess and Go. So it's pretty good at learning human behavior and then, like, figuring out the game and then deciding how winning the game is. And in crypto, winning the game is fairly simple, right? It's whoever makes the most money or whatever. So you could basically, all the things we think about in simplifying DeFi, like, you know, like, oh, it's really tough to get from, you know, Harmony to Terra. I have to do this bridge and I got to do this. Like, once you have, like, simpler and simpler ways to connect not only DeFi, but APIs of centralized finance, what you can do is you could not only predict human behavior through machine learning computational networks, and then
you can destroy it.
But you can actually move the market too. Because if you know, for example, that, like, price action is something that human beings watch, and you know that, like, oh, look, it's a cup and handle, like, the thing can just draw it at some point.
Yeah, this is occurring right now. Yeah, they're doing it on exchanges for sure.
Yeah, there's a lot of arguments that actually some of the, I know it's always conspiratorial to say, like, oh, you know, people are, like, drawing chart patterns by buying, you know, a certain amount of coin and pushing the price a certain way to make the, you know, everyone go, hey, look, and start, you know, throwing leverage at things, right? So, but ultimately what can happen is these systems, when you connect them to, like, Twitter and, you know, YouTube and whatever, you can actually become more and more and more elegant, especially with smaller market cap coins, develop sort of, like, you know, manipulative sort of structures around them. And I don't think anyone's figured out a way to, like, prevent any of that, really, right? Like, to some extent, they try to say that traditional finance, this is not a thing, but we all sort of know that it is, because, like, you know, it's like CNBC is always the top. Yeah,
the way to prevent that is you just be a slave.
Yeah, exactly. You're just slave to the machine and call it a day, you're saying. Like, take the blue pill.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is kind of creeping into the crypto space more and more. And that's what I was trying to say. Like, you know, when I was talking about charts earlier and I was talking about the volume profile and, like, fib extensions, and you're noticing that traders are placing their trades on these things. And that's why you're seeing that, like, prices dump below and above these price points. Another tool on TradingView, actually, that you can use is called the AutoFib, actually, and it will draw them for you. I don't know if you guys have played with this. So instead of having to, like, manually draw the Fibonacci extensions, it'll do it for you. And it's a little tricky because you have to set the like, time scale window. Otherwise, it's not picking the right bottom and top to, like, draw the extensions. But it does do a pretty good job on the weekly chart, pretty automated. And it does a decent job on the daily chart, but you might have to, like, manually adjust the time range that it's measuring to make sure it captures, like, major swings, like a major bottom and major top. But it gets pretty close to automating it for you. And if you get to the point where you can automate the AutoFib chart, one of the things you can do on TradingView actually is, it's getting to the point where you can actually, like, send trading signals. You can send buy and sell trading signals out of TradingView to, like, you know, certain types of bot platforms. I don't remember which one it was off the top of my head, but you can actually connect those trading signals to actual buy and sell targets, right? So you don't need to even, like, be, like, putting these limit orders in manual anymore. That's how sophisticated it gets now. And you can do it, like, it's pretty democratized. Like, you can get on TradingView and, like, do this shit yourself, pretty much. Like, you just have to figure out which exchange or which, like, trading platform will allow you to connect your like exchanged over to your, you know, to this mechanism. And it can even do generic signals, like it just sends like a certain string of like, it sends a certain string via email to something that can read an email based signal, and then it like puts a sales, buy or sell signal in. So it doesn't have to be extraordinarily sophisticated. But what TradingView is doing is they're trying to integrate with more and more centralized exchanges so that you can just connect up like Coinbase to it. And let's say you have like, you did all your technical analysis shit. You decided, okay, I want to buy like Voyager token at $3. And you can actually set a line where, which is a buy order in TradingView, and it will execute that on an exchange. So it's really cool how like TradingView has built up their platform and such.
Is there going to be a token? Do you know? Have you heard anything?
I don't know. I don't think so. They make a ton of money off of their subscriptions, I'm sure. But no, I don't think they're, I don't think they're doing any kind of like IP. Well, I don't know. Are they doing an IPO? I'm not sure.
I hope they're not going to do something that silly and make a token.
No, but TradingView has become actually very popular on the heels of crypto traders. In fact, part of how you knew there was going to be a big bull run with Bitcoin was that like over the year 2019, there was like this huge viral growth of the number of users using TradingView for Bitcoin specifically, which is interesting. Like, and then you go, if you go on TradingView, there's like a section where people like to post their own little charts and like chart art and shit, you know, like they really get into it. And there's like a whole discussion space there of charts and like, you know, people get popular, sort of like Twitter. There's like people on TradingView that like get popular on their little social section, like posting charts of things. So if you're interested in that sort of thing, certainly check it out. But in TradingView, the number of users just started growing virally, and the number one use case for TradingView was people getting into crypto. You do stocks and everything else on there too, by the way. But you can set alarms and things too, like for like percentage drops in coins, and it'll alarm you, and then you can just sort of like go on your exchange and buy things. But eventually, the intuition becomes: wait, if you can set alarms to buy certain things at certain times, and you can use different indicators like, I don't know, moving average crosses or whatever, why not just connect TradingView directly to an exchange and you can skip all the bot programs entirely, right? Like, what if you could have TradingView just draw you up a grid, right? And you don't have to pay all the fees on an exchange to use a grid bot, because you can just have it do it, like, you know, semi do it manually, but do it on the fly, right? You see what I'm saying? So like some of these technologies, like what TradingView has been trying to do, that have been really interesting. Like, it makes sense for like an exchange to buy TradingView, like, I don't know, Binance, for example, and like integrate it perfectly in there. I mean, they would just make a lot of money doing that, I think. And so a lot of exchanges have an integrated TradingView, right? Like TradingView's charts, you see them on CoinHaul, you see them on like, you see them everywhere. I mean, basically. So TradingView has really made a name for itself as the like destination for like, you know, price chart, whatever, and indicators and things like that. I've come full circle though, to the extent that like my sort of what happens when you first start getting into trading is you figure, you know what, there's all these people that claim to do so well. They're making so much money, they're trading, and look, they're posting these like crazy amounts of money they made, and then they're like creating YouTube channels, and they're buying Bugatti Veyrons, whatever the fuck they're doing, right? Like you see all this and you go, you know what, there must really be something to this technical trading thing. It must be really, really, really good, because like, how, like, I must know this stuff if I'm going to do well, right? Like, that's how you start thinking. Because like, if so many people are saying it's true, it probably is, right? Like if everyone says, you know, a vaccine's bad, all of a sudden it is. That's like, you know, just like it just becomes reality at some point. So you figure when you're going into this space, like you're trading, and you figure, you know what, I probably need to learn all these like technical tools and da da da. And like, you know, if not, I'm just not like getting that edge, and it's going to take me too long to get rich. All the usual like greed features that show up. So then you start getting into it and you're like, okay, I think I understand like moving averages a little bit. And I think maybe I understand some of these chart patterns, which, you know, you can make a litany of chart astrology patterns of different things. And at some point, probably some of these chart patterns and things worked in the sense that they do sort of describe like human behavior a little bit. But what happened was is that over years and years and years, like, yeah, if you were the first people to discover some of these trading behaviors back in the 30s or something, that maybe like you could use it, they were an edge of some kind. But eventually what happens is that like when everyone's looking at the same thing, it just starts becoming like meaningless because everyone's acting preemptively in a sense. So then each of these things becomes less and less valuable. So you start like looking at and then you hear phrases that people use like, oh, the trend is your friend or whatever and whatnot. Right. And and then you hear phrases like, well, the trend is your friend until it isn't. Well, is it or is it dead?
Yeah, when has that ever been true? Like, we're all hipsters, right?
Yeah, it's just like none of this is like really very, very true. Like, there is a certain amount of like I don't know. It's to the extent that you can trust any of that with your life.
It's like
savings.
The pick winners mentality, right? Like, if you pick a winner, you're not going to lose.
Yeah. So, well, there's fundamentals and there's technicals, and I think the obviously you'd rather own like the company that becomes Apple than the company that becomes Nokia, right? Like, so the clearly there's some mixture of luck, fundamentals, and all those kinds of things involved. But
it's like the top 10 in crypto, though. It's the same concept, really. Like, you could just like fire a dart and like you're gonna do okay, but like you can also find the best one that's gonna like way out-compete the rest, which is Luna.
Yeah. I mean, it you know, when it comes to the technical analysis piece of it, like, so there's moving averages and there's a lot of other things that you could look at. And I noticed in the last maybe year or two, people just started like drawing like rectangles, like the supply zone and the,
you know. You just find two points that make a line and you just make a line. That's it.
Exactly. That's it. And you say, okay, well, this is a supply zone and this is where like, there's too much supply and this is where there's like there's demand and whatnot. And I don't know, like, I guess that became like the thing at some point and people stopped bothering with moving
the
averages.
3,000-year-old art. It's almost insulting.
Yeah. It's gotten like really, really like, oh, look, this was where there was a breakout in price and probably, you know, there's buyers there. And if price fell back down to that, you'd know you'd find buyers again, probably blah, blah, blah. And you know, so there's probably some like, mathematics, and there's some math involved with the way like people behave and like how return on investment works, so you can understand that, but there's nothing for sure that predicts you get to those spaces. So I started moving away from the idea of like trying to predict with too much precision where price is going to go, and more like, how do I get something with a little bit, if I'm going to trade something like consistently, can I do something?
And that's like the roots of TA as well, is not like price number. It's, you know, it went like TA almost predates like price history in a sense.
Yeah. I think it like, well, it's only so predictive in terms of its utility. So now some traders will say, well, you know what, if I can get 50%,
sorry, I said predates, not predicts.
Oh, predates, yeah. No, but some traders will say like, okay, if I can be right 55% of the time and I'm on 100x leverage, like, you know, I can be wrong, like, you know, 45% of the time with appropriate risk management, I can still get out ahead, right? Like, so these are the traders that like, you know, claim that they need to be able to eat with their trading money. So like they need to actually like, you know, make a certain amount every year, because if they don't, like, then they're you know they can't afford McDonald's or whatever, like, as the joke goes. And but what happens is, I think so if it was true that you could just like trade your way to infinity, then most hedge funds would be doing better than most average people. But if I beat 99.99% of all hedge funds on the planet by owning, like, you know, MasterCard, Visa, Bitcoin, you know, and now Terra, well, then, you know, the reality is you don't need to know any of that shit, is what it tells you. It tells you that you just need to learn how to pick winners better. The time should probably be spent in the research of picking the winners in terms of utility, teams, everything else, as opposed to spending a whole lot of time learning technical trading skills, which is probably not nearly as productive to you. So that's why, like, when I read Philip Swift's article about the golden ratio multiples and sort of adoption, like, growth, I have moved away from like almost investing in anything that isn't adoption level growth. Because if we're living in like the adoption level, like decades, right? Where I think Raoul Paul, like, you know, threw the term like the exponential age out there. He's basically right. You're trying to find the next network effect thing, whether it's the cell phone, whether it's computing, machine learning, whatever. And it has to be an investable form, right? It's not like, okay, well, like you don't have, in other words, a dozen other investors have bought Boston Dynamics before you did, and you're like the last dude on the totem pole to buy a little bit of the company. That's one thing, right? People have wised up in tech. Like, they're not giving away the farm that easily. Like, they'll IPO after, like, you know, a lot of the value, like, you know, the 10,000x gains have already been had by the dude that owns the original company / VCs. So the remaining stock investor are sort of getting fucked at the end of the day, is really what it is. Because you're waiting for the hope that, well, maybe if I invest in this, that like 30 years from now I can retire or whatever. Whereas the Web 3.0 concept is really more you participate, hopefully, in a greater proportion of the adoption level and network growth. And then presumably you're getting some value out of the actual, the transactions on the network and such. So, you know, if you look at through crypto as a good reference point, it's sort of all over the map in terms of how useful some of these are. And while yes, some coins can pump, even if they have shitty tokenomics, like if all of us decide to like shill QRDO and it goes up, I mean, like anything can go up. The question is, will it stay up? That's the problem. And when you have a whole lot of like you know, shitty tokenomics, what'll happen is you're going to get dumped on in a way that you can't possibly imagine, especially if you're the top buyer and you get screwed, right? Like, so if you buy, it's one thing if you bought at the bottom and, you know, everyone shills it and, you know, we're all going to make it and, we're doing the like kumbaya. But what ends up happening is like, when bad times come, that's when the tokenomics really matter. Like, what's going to determine the price floor of something? And you see this with the NFT problem, right? Like, you have NFT projects that are maybe some of which are really, really interesting and culturally so relevant that, you know, like, you know, somehow or another, you know, the Bored Apes and the you know, the Pet Rocks or whatever, cyberpunks and all that, maybe because of their cultural significance, they're going to have some long-term valuation. But the floor price on many other NFT projects is going to have a hard time taking off. And I think it's one thing if you know what you're getting into and you know you're buying something that is not necessarily going to go up in value, that's fine. But when it comes to crypto and some of the promises that are made, the problem becomes, if I buy a Bitcoin top at, you know, let's say when it was at 20,000, and I have reasonable conviction it's going to return, it's going to do a cup and handle, whatever, it's going to return to that price, even if it takes years to do so, and I can hold on to a conviction, that's at least a reasonable investment, right? But if you're stuck with something that you have no idea if it's going to come back up, and at the same time it has zero yield and this type of thing, well, then it's just going to go to zero eventually. Like, there's numerous coins right now going to zero. Bitcoin SV will go to zero almost with near certainty, right? Like, there's no yield. Nobody wants it. There's nobody building on it. And like, there's no purpose for it. And it was on top of that, some like, you know, that Craig White shenanigans and, you know, it's just a garbage coin, right? XRP, good example. It almost doesn't matter if the company executes because there is like nothing special about the XRP quote unquote technology that hasn't already been superseded. So that's,
are they just block trading or how do they have the volume that they have?
I have no idea. Like, yeah, I have no idea. Either there's like a lot of bots trading or whatever. The bottom line is, in my view, there's no good reason for the token to go to like something, some fraction of zero. And the reason for that is because there's no value accrual model, right? And if you say that to someone like, oh, like, what does that mean? Like, oh, no, they're going to, all the banks in the universe are going to use this. Like, really? You know, at the end of the day, like,
it's ridiculous.
It's almost completely ridiculous because at the end of the day, what's going to happen is you're going to have a lot of competing tech for transactional base layers. And, you know, like, even on its face, it sounds idiotic. Like, why would a bank...
MasterCard, essentially. Like, it just sounds like it's MasterCard.
Yeah. And why would the bank want to now be subservient to this XRP coin now? Like, with all the various
MasterCard.
Yeah, with all the various decentralized options coming out, like that don't cost the banks almost anything. Like, why do they want to be holding to this like centralized agency, this company? I don't know. Who knows? The point is, like, it to me, it would make more sense if like the banking industry was like, oh yeah, we need our own like project. They would just build one on Cosmos or something and call it a day. Why the hell would they want to get involved with these people? So I think the long-term vision for like that doesn't make sense to me. It just like there's no token value accrual model again. So it's all wishful thinking at that point, and you don't have yield on it. You don't have like you're not getting. I mean, it would be one thing if you'd get some of the transactional value as a network owner, right? So it doesn't have any Web 3.0 features, means it's going to zero. Like there's no reason for the retail speculator to own XRP. Zero, zilch, nada, none. Right? Like none. It's just idiotic in comparison to most of the Web 3.0 alternatives now. So with that being in mind, like it's just going to go to zero. Like that's all there I can say about it. Like,
which will just like in effect mean it just doesn't succeed, right? Like everything in a sense goes to infinity and it's at one.
Like, yeah, that's the other thing too. It could just simply not succeed and it's still as good as going to zero for you and me, right? Like it's got to at least beat inflation. It's got to do something.
Because very few of these will like hit zero and get delisted or something, but like eventually we're going to be sitting on the moon and they're going to be at, you know, whole numbers.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I'm not sure how the process of listing, delisting is going to happen in the long term future.
Got to get there eventually, right?
I don't know. Yeah, you're going to get there eventually where, you know what, you have such a modicum of like such a huge number of coins that your coin just becomes like completely obscured into oblivion. Like, there's no public narrative whatsoever for, let's say, Bitcoin Cash. Like, none, right? Like, what could the Bitcoin Cash people do now?
But is there any cost to, like, that's why I wonder if there will be delisting or anything. Because, like, if it doesn't cost anything and it's just sitting there, then you end up with, like, zombie coins, like we see with SPACs and stuff.
Yeah, I think you'll see, I think you'll have zombie coins for sure.
Like, the Dino coins, I guess, are kind of like that, right?
Although you will typically, like, if you look at any shitcoin that goes to zero, like it's not zero zero, but it's some like, you know, it's like you're asymptotic to zero essentially, right? But there'll come a point at which like, okay, the BCH miner is gonna be like, fuck it, I quit, right? Like there's not gonna be a reason to continue that. There's not gonna be a reason to develop on it.
And then liquidity dries up, I guess.
Like, yeah, really. it just dries up into oblivion over a period of time. And you never know how long it's gonna take. And with decentralized networks, you know, it's hard to tell how long that will take. But for you and me as an investor, the question is like, why would I hold this thing? Am I gonna like pay for my movie tickets with BCH? Probably not, right? Like, you know, the reality is like whatever fantasy that was spun.
If you can
that,
do it and go to the movies.
Yeah, right. I mean, like if you can. So, but I mean, but at the same time, even if you could spend your BCH or Bitcoin Cash, like, are you going to collect it so that you can go to the movies one day with it? Probably not. Like, no. there's no rationality to it. Like, so I think that's one of the smart intuitions about Luna Terra is that you have the volatile coin for the speculator, and then you have the stable coin to handle everything else. And like, that makes sense to have both in the same network. And that intuition was extremely, I think,
and there's money to use and money to hold. That's why I think it's beautiful. Yes. Because like there's no one that's like playing around. Like, you're never supposed to spend money in your life in the Terra ecosystem. And that's what you see with these maxis. Like, they're just not even down to earth.
Yeah, like why would I sell my Bitcoin if it's just gonna keep going up, right?
And not everyone is a millionaire before they started. So like some of us want to spend some money, you know.
right. So yeah, this is kind of the problem in like these value models with these coins. And I think there's nothing particularly, and I don't think that a lot of new coins have necessarily automatically learned these old lessons. Because a lot of people that like developers I've talked to, and there's people that are in crypto space, I don't think everybody has the same intuitions about like the functions, utility, and the meaning of crypto and how it's used. I think what happens is you have a lot of people in computer science, a lot of new developers come in, but they may not necessarily have like a good fundamental background in terms of like how government works or how
they're going to have no background. I think like that's what I'm saying.
I mean,
I have friends who are in web two and like these guys get like paid six figures to like, you know, do whippets and copy paste code, and they like don't understand like. They don't understand Web3. They're like really smart people, but they've just been like cush. They have this cushy job and they have benefits and they don't care at all. But they're all going to end up in Web3 soon, so it's going to be kind of interesting.
I guess what I'm saying is, like, the number of people that are, like, really, really, like, epic geniuses regarding theories of human economics, you know, governance, and all the other nuances that it takes to kind of create sort of, like, a magical tokenomics. Even when teams of people get together, like, you know, all of these pros and cons get sort of hashed out, almost like you're building a new constitution or, you know, I mean, you're basically building like a government and economy simultaneously, but people have struggled for thousands of years to do that well. And the idea that somehow like your four computer science friends in your dorm are going to solve this problem in 1 week and like push out some project, the odds are a lot of these things are not going to be as good as you think, right? You
know, and now they're just sitting in the cubicle just like everyone else, and the matrix continues.
Right, exactly. They're thinking they're changing the world, but they actually just create the exact same thing again and again and again and again. Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah, it's that Russian, you know, like doll that keeps, you know, opening up, and you just, yeah, but
the gift that keeps giving.
Because like even when I talk to some of the devs and different teams, like just for fun, I've been doing it just to kind of see like what kind of innovations people are creating, what are their thoughts, where do they think they can create value. And I feel like there are a lot of people that are in the developer space in crypto, but that have not necessarily spent a tremendous amount of time like doing things like trading or using bots, or like, I don't know, have been in technology so long that they've seen like the rise and fall of cities, you know, that kind of thing.
Learning philosophy, maybe.
And all, yeah. And I mean, but a lot of that you sort of pick up over life too. So the younger you are, the less you sort of like see these sort of elements to some extent. And you also have to suffer through a lot of like, you have to suffer through them things in your
that's
life.
That's a fair,
like,
point. I've experienced, you know, a lot worse shit.
Yeah. Like you have to like to truly understand like the impact of, let's say, health insurance. You'd have to like get sick and someone, you know, has to die and has to be impacted by the health insurance. You know, like you don't get a full like feel for the concept of something until you've maybe experienced it on different levels.
You might not get vaccinated until all your friends die or something.
Until everyone else dies. Yeah. Whoops. You know, so these intuitions are not obvious to people. And I think it's true also in the crypto developer community. It's not obvious like what makes, let's say, great tokenomics. So that's why like Delphi Digital has like come together and to try to build like a group of people that maybe thinks about that as a career sort of, and then, you know, has tried to build like coin projects and such to try to answer all these questions and try to perfect them. But it's a pretty long, hard road, and not very many coins can get the tokenomics right. So a lot of what you're doing, if you're a long-term investor, is you're sort of gambling. And if you're a short-term trader, you're sort of gambling, right? So this is the problem in crypto. It's like finding the project that is not really a gamble and more of a true sort of investment grade, like
property. I think that's why I ended here, is I have always hated gambling.
Yeah, maybe so. Like maybe what happens is you get to a point where you're like, okay, I need a style and a strategy that, yeah, is not just straight up gambling.
Yeah. Like I'm trying to make sense of things, and like this makes the most sense.
Yeah, this is also why like I tend to favor like mathematically like strategies that like involve basically some sort of mathematical plan, like for example like buying exponentially down, or you know, whatever, like, you know, you're trying to get at least a base level of strategy to sort of build sort of positions and things that are not totally reckless, and where, you know, you go all in and you get wrecked on something and then realize well, not wrecked, but, you know, you got to ride out a major downturn in your I think some of the quantitative traders call it like inventory. Like, in other words, if you're...
I call them head sheets. A lot of people, yeah, do spreadsheets. I do head sheets.
Yeah. So like you're like a bag holder. You're holding quote unquote inventory, if you want to be really like euphemism about it. And you're sort of stuck with like, you know, coins that are not like performing well. I think what most people here would want, really what you're actually looking for, if you think about it, is you want to be in the green on basically the entire portfolio all the time, if you could muster that, right? Like that's what you're trying to achieve. And the reason you're trying to achieve that is not even because if you're like whether you're gaining or not, you're hoping that whatever you're in is at least a store of value while you wait, right? Like, I'm sure many people here, like, if you bought Atom at $5 and now it's at $40, you're like, all right, fine. It goes to 35, it goes to, you know, 55, whatever. I'll just kind of ride it because, like, you know what? I could exit anytime and my, like, capital is, like, you know, preserved.
But what if Luna was going up?
Yeah, what if Luna, exactly. But what I'm saying is, like, if you're in the green, like, you have a tendency to be a lot more comfortable with where you are at. And the people that are in the red are always asking, like, when's price going up? When's this happening? And, like, you know, that's how you see that behavior. And so, like, when you're talking on Twitter about a coin, like, inevitably someone's going to buy in the red. And that's why you almost always have to just keep repeating over and over and over again that, like, everyone buys and the coin drops after they buy. Like, it's common. And in fact, that's what you should be planning for. Like, you should be planning for the price going down after you buy. And if you do that, like, you don't need a lot of exotic technical trading skills, right? What'll happen is you'll allocate the amount of money you should spend based on the presumption that it's going to go down, not up.
Eventually, you start to panic when it goes down if you don't have money.
Exactly. No, and you actually feel pretty comfortable if you have some spending money to buy things, especially if you have some conviction about something and you're like, oh, it's low. And now you're like, oh, now I just have to watch it go down and go back up again. And I waste all this time, right? So at the same time, you could be in a situation where you're underinvested too. Like, you might say, well, you know, whoa, I really did underestimated Luna at $5. And now I'm like having to hammer it at $25, right? And I've made this mistake too. I'm like,
okay. That's where we're at now. I think most people with Luna is like, we all got in at 50 or under. Hopefully a lot of people. I shouldn't speak for everyone, but.
And, you know, there's different points along the price curve and you're like, okay, wait, is it going to go down more? Should I take on some, you know, anchor borrow and get more of this? Should I do it now? Should I do it? Like, you know, cause you know how this goes. So if you don't go and do an anchor borrow and just sort of empty your borrow power and go get Luna at $85 where it is now, if it goes to 1,000, you're going to be like, oh my God, I should have done it. Right.
I got into like $5 and I look now, I'm like, dude, it is so hard to get like 10 more Luna. Like, it is ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. Right. But if you were, but at the same time, if you went and you like use your borrow power and you bought $85 worth and it goes down to 75, you're going to be sitting there in like mass panic until it goes back up to where it was. Right. So it's like, you could take more risk, but you have to make sure you can like sleep at night when you do it. But it's an interesting problem. But every time the price goes up, you're like, oh shit, I should have taken more, right? That's always.
And just know when you market buy at 50% slippage, it's only about a month till you get a profit.
It's going to take you a while.
It didn't take nearly as long as I thought.
It's funny. 50% slippage. Whoops. Yeah. Loop finance, by the way, be careful on there. Yeah. If you want Loop, I noticed some fairly obvious.
Like, I got Ethereum at 17 and 1800 on Loop finance in the last month.
Wait, what? How?
Market buying with complete luck.
So wait, but why would the price be lower than it should be?
The last time I literally like I went on and it crashed. It actually flash crashed down to like $500. So I just went on and I was like I don't remember.
Oh, okay, I got you. It was a flash crash.
Which by the way, that's why I don't know about Loop, but I'm not bashing them. But like I'm wary because I've seen multiple flash crashes on there.
No, I went to do like a routine transaction just to like check it to see like I don't remember what it was, Luna B Luna price or something. And for some reason, like math, like it was providing like some crazy numbers where it was giving me mega slippage. And I'm like, what's going on here? I couldn't figure out why. I'm like, wait.
Yeah, they have a decimal error like occurring somewhere.
Yeah. So I was like, okay, if I hit execute here, I might get screwed. So that's part of the reason why I didn't really do many of those pools yet, like the AUST pool on there, just because I wasn't sure how safe. Like,
that's right. That's why my slippage was 50%, was because to get that Ethereum buy, I had to do that. That's right.
That's funny. So anyway, but anybody else before we kind of like... I've got work in the morning, so I was just kind of like shooting the shit. But if anyone else has any kind of other chart of interest or coin of interest that we're taking a peek at, I can do that real quick. I don't know if anyone's left that has any questions, but yeah, it's kind of fun just kind of blowing hot air up here a little bit. But yeah, I mean, hopefully like some of these kinds of conversation points make sense and like have some utility for people. I think philosophically, I the way I look at it is I only really want to be in the coins that I'm in any serious investment in something I legitimately am comfortably being called a moon boy for. Meaning if I don't think a coin can moon to levels, like if I don't believe that Luna can go to 1,000, I shouldn't be in it at all. That's kind of my general concept. So at least over time. So the if you can't be a moon boy about your chain for some reason, and your intuition tells you, wait, like there's like a dozen competitors that do exactly the same thing, and I don't see how 10 years from now this is a thing. Then you should
be deciding. Sell the bottom anyway if you don't sell it now. So,
well, yeah, that's true too, because you may actually, because the lower it goes, the harder it is for those things to recover too. So, yeah, you definitely want.
And if you're doubting your conviction from the start, like you end up selling at the max pain point.
Yeah, and you're going to see that happen. I've seen that happen in many, many coins actually. That people.
Anyone who has max pained, it's like you're like, oh, that was it. I just felt it.
Yeah, right. No, I've seen that happen in Bitcoin for that matter. If you spend enough time on in these circles, like the number of people that sold the bottoms at Bitcoin is impressive.
I sold 29K. That was my first max pain. I'll admit it.
29. Yeah. No, I'm talking about people that.
Oh, it was like exactly the bottom, like within 30
people
seconds.
People that bought at 12K and sold at 3K. You know, that was pretty normal.
Yeah, right.
Pretty common. Yeah, there was always a seller down there somewhere, right? So, yeah, Graham, go ahead.
Hey, man.
Hey.
I just don't want to keep you up too late, but do you want to pop over the Astro chart and walk me through it? It's kind of. You think or if it's a little bearish when the unlocks come? I know I'm excited for like the governance staking to come up. That should take a lot off the market. And
let me get pull that up. It's on CoinHaul, right?
Yeah, I think it is.
I haven't even looked at it before lately, and I own a chunk of Astro. I just literally like left it alone and didn't give a shit about it. It's sort flat. Of
flat. Super flat. It's just it came out, it dropped, and then just hung around. People are waiting for that governance to come out, and then.
Let me pull this up real quick to see what it looks like. So it kind of had its like, I guess that early price discovery where sort of it came to a bottom of like $1.51 and then it kind of crawled up to about $2 and now it's at $1.62. Okay, so what I'm not sure about Nash Report, and this is coming from someone that owns a fair amount of token, by the way, I sort of figured when I did the community like farming thing, I just threw some coins into these community farms that I figured I had anyway, and just like, why not just do it, right? I wasn't like hardcore into becoming a long-term like liquidity provider whale or whatever you want to call that. So I didn't really take this may be as serious as some other people. So there's definitely people with like a lot more expertise in Astroport by a wide mile than me. Okay. So take that for what it's worth. But like there's so many mechanics things going on with Astroport. I think it's almost impossible to really predict what to do about the price of this thing. And that's probably why it's sort of like trickling down. There's a fair amount of, the token unlocks that have to happen. There's also token emissions related to, incentive provisions. And then there's the other thing, which is like the locking of Astro token for, producing more Astro token or whatever. The way that Astroport is designed, it's actually designed to benefit the people that do LPs, and it's benefiting the people who hold Astro and like lock it up. So I think looking at it from just a purely like if I use the tokens I already have or those that I'm getting rewards in, I took my Astro tokens and I stuck them in the Astro UST pool. I'm not sure if that was the right thing to do, but I did it. I have no clue. In other words, I just tossed it in there.
No one really knew what was going on. It's so complex.
Exactly. I wasn't really totally sure. Honestly, I was like, okay. I mean, I heard Jose talk about it a bit. I thought I understood, but I'm still not sure I do. Anyway, so I sort of like threw some UST at it, and I like created an LP with the UST Astro. Again, I'm not sure if that was the right thing to do, but I did. And it's producing like more Astro like rewards. And then I guess you're supposed to take those rewards and decide to like lock them up in, Astro governance and, voting Astro and stuff like this.
Yeah. The voting Astro, you can kind of decide, like, so say you had the lot of the B Luna Luna, you can, if everyone votes for that, then the rewards go up for that one, which is, it's pretty bullish, because it's almost like curving convex over.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, these guys designed this token to sort of go up in value over time, and to be desirable to hold. So my thought was, I wasn't even going to pay attention to what the value of this coin actually was. Like, all the coin Astro that I got and anything that I can acquire in farming, I will do so. And then I'm just going to, like, capture as much of it as I can and then not worry about what its value is, with the presumption that as time goes on, the value probably will go up, but I don't know where the floor is going to be. So if you're going to say, okay, well, all right, do you take your unlocked tokens, do you sell them in anticipation that this is going to drop, and then try to buy them back lower, I guess would be the question to ask. Or, you know, if you're going to buy the Astro token outright, like, what is the right price to get into it? Now, for buying into it, the math is fairly simple. I would say, like, if you bought it today, then, like, literally every 10% it goes down, you double your buy and call it a day. And if it has a high yield, the native token itself, I don't know what it's going to be, but you could basically, like, do a triple buy. Like, so for example, I buy $100 now and it goes down 10%, maybe I'll buy like $300. And, you know, so like 300, 900, you know, those kinds of multiples, 27, you know, 100, that kind of thing. So I would go really small and then go really, really big on the way down, presuming that it has high yield. If the yield is not at least like 10% or something like that, then maybe I don't have to be that aggressive and maybe not get as much. The other reason I might get a whole bunch of this would be is if I'm going to be a liquidity provider and I want to have like serious voting power into my pools. But like you and me are, you know, don't sound like the people that are going to be that hardcore about that, right?
Yeah,
so sure. Like if you're throwing $100 million at a pool or something, like I understand at some point you'd want to have that power. But a lot of assets are going to be coming to Astroport. Like I think Astroport will be a lot like in the future with growth, it'll be a lot like Sushi. It'll be a lot like Curve and all these other big things where they'll have a lot of tokens and a huge number of liquidity providers. And if you have some large liquidity coins emerge, like you know, BTC, ETH, and things like that, which I think there's some hint that those are coming, then, or BSOL and a lot of others, then what you'll have is a lot of cross-chain traffic. And there'll be a bigger reason to have, like, the LP tokens and the, I mean, sorry, the LPs and also the Astro tokens and such. So I think if you look at it this way, if the site becomes really, really big, the Astro token will be in demand, if not by you and me, it'll be in demand by like these mega LP whales. And holding it for now is because you want to unload your bags at like 100x from where the price is now, right? Like that's the theory. So, you know, I think the prices that you're getting and the way you're getting Astro token now is one of those things. It's like you buy and hold forever kind of thing. So if it's going to even like remotely get to the level that people think it will, then it's like a mega moon bag. You don't want to mess with it. That's been my philosophy for Astro. So
yeah, my thoughts on it are like, you look back at the ecosystem plays like Uniswap on Ethereum, people who sold the airdrop right away. And then, you know, that story of how it went 100x from there, right? Like,
yeah, you're
betting on the ecosystem to do well and new dApps deploy and provide liquidity here and everything like that. This kind of has to be successful unless there's going to be another DEX or AMM that comes along and kind of...
Yeah. In fact, a great example of this is how well both Osmo and Juno have done. So if you were an Atom holder last year, and you got like the snapshot date or whatever, I was like right after that, it was kind of pissed me off. And if you had sufficient amount of Atom and you got the early airdrops of Osmo and you also got Juno and you actually like staked those things, like Atom has actually outperformed almost everything if you include those two airdrops. Can you believe that? Like that's how, like when people have looked at the amount of like growth, had you just basically taken all those airdrops and just staked them, oh my God, like you blew everything out of the water almost.
Yep.
So that's the sort of same concept here, I think, with Astro. If you're getting, if you're either a staker and you're getting their coin, or you're just, you got it out of the community farming and everything, I would say hold on to them forever. Like, this is one of, these are the ones that you would hold on to infinity or zero kind of thing. Like, you just don't mess with them. Don't overthink it. Don't try to do anything with them, is my opinion. But like, that's just, that's what I'm doing. So that's why I haven't even been watching the price. I'm like, I don't even want to give a shit. That way I'm not even paying, you know, like, so I don't like consider it as part of like my liquid pool of stuff I can use to buy Luna or something.
Yeah, I agree. That's the same strategy. I think I've just looked at the chart twice or three times. Like, I saw it.
Yeah.
Price discovery at like 220 or something, and then seen it crash. My one buddy's like, blow up my phone. I put on it. He's like, what's going on? I'm like, just don't even look at it. Look at it a year. Like, chill out.
Yeah, don't even look. Yeah, that's the way to go with these type of things.
I guess
yeah.
My next question, if you got one more,
yeah, go ahead.
Would be have we heard anything about Mars Protocol and if they're going to kind of do a similar? Because I think they're Delphi Digital Tokenomics.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are they going to try to simplify it down a little bit, or are they going to do the same kind of?
I think there's a similar. So Martian Council is like the governance concept for them. And basically, they're trying to build their token to sort of like have a high amount of, I guess, power when it comes to decisions on Mars. So, but as far as like how useful is it as an investor, as a tokenomic, I really don't even know. Like, they're pretty good at figuring out how to make the coin worth something. So I'm going to presume that I want some Mars token, but I have no idea like how that's going to play out. No idea. I think anything that Delphi touches is worth having a little bit of, you know, have a little mini moon bag and call it a day. Yeah, even if you're not sure what the hell it is.
I'm definitely more interested to get a little more inside look of it when it drops in the tokenomics. And I'm pretty excited for that one. Obviously it's going to be pretty
yeah. Cool. The other one that's coming very soon is going to be Prism. And it's hard to tell how to manage that. Like, do you go ahead and buy some outright in that mango, like, what do they call it? The mango auction or whatever the hell, the mango
markets. Mango markets. Yeah. That's from Seoul, right?
Yeah. So that's where you put a bunch of cash into a big pool. And, you know, I think 10% of the tokens or something are going to be sold this way. And then like, that's the initial price discovery. So you, whatever fraction of the pool you happen to own, you get that fraction of the total coins, and that's how it works. But, you know, the other way you can earn the Prism token, and presumably this is the free way to do it in a sense, is that you actually just refract your Luna into P Luna and Y Luna, and that kind of like there's some sort of farming, community farming reward of some kind that goes with doing an LP or something. So there's some different ways to earn the Prism token. You probably want the one where you're getting the token for relatively for free, I would say, or sort of risk-free. So I would be watching out for that. Like, the community farming type things can be pretty good as far as like,
Yeah, definitely want to go back and look at how Mango played out. Cause I can't remember if I heard bad things about how it played out, if it tanked off the start, or I can't remember exactly.
It shouldn't tank off the start because that's sort of the floor price at that point. I guess where it could tank is if like, so I get the Mango market part, but what about the token emissions of Prism after that, right? Like, let's say you're community farming Prism token somehow. That buyer is basically getting that token for free, sort of, and it has a value at that point because it's had price discovery from the Mango market. And then that person sells, then it's, I guess, possible to have the price fall below the price that was originally sold.
Yeah, I was just kind of referencing what actually happened with Mango. I think I can't remember exactly. That's why I want to go back and look at like how Mango exactly played out, because I think it'll be pretty similar. You can almost get a until the point where you get the P and Y Luna playing into it, but
yeah,
the initial pool will be interesting to see if they've kind of mirror each other pretty closely.
Yeah, I just don't know whether I should just like, you know, take a massive anchor bar or an ape into this Mango market or not. That's the thing. Like, like, do you want to be someone else's exit liquidity, right? Is that the question? Is the question?
Yeah, exactly.
Wanted
exactly
to find out about it. It's like, wait a minute, like, how does this work? So yeah, I'm not sure how that, the way it was described to me, it was like, that's the floor price somehow. But then if you're getting any sort of like emission token reward, I would think, I don't know. I would think that those would ultimately be potentially sold and then lower the possible floor beyond lower than where it is. So yeah. I don't know.
And then last thing going here, I just saw it quickly pop up on my phone here. Yeah. I probably missed this, you guys talking about earlier, but did I see something about Invictus DAO from Seoul potentially popping up on Terra?
Yeah, someone had mentioned that earlier today. Like, that's something we need to research, figure out what that is.
Yeah.
And how it benefits us.
Yeah, because I just saw, like, here, it's on the Terra UST, Terra Money. They just tweeted out a picture of, like, the Invictus DAO, and they were talking about owls being auspicious, and then allegedly the intern was drunk on their Twitter and tweeted out some other stuff. Like, there's quite possibly two separate redacted this month. January is going to be fun in it, and then both are non-out related. So I think there's going to be three drops in January, it's looking like. Doe even replied to the tweet and was said, intern's drunk again, nice, or something like that.
Or they're just having like some fun, I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Just goofing around. But
yeah, but the purpose of Invictus is what? Did you just sort that part out? Like,
I have no idea. I don't follow Seoul closely at all.
It looked it looked a lot like, I know the guy said doesn't look like a fork of Olympus DAO, but at least it looks very eerily similar to Wonderland. If they kind of try to tease us with a bit, maybe they try to, because you know you can stake a bond, so maybe USD will become like a discounted bond as a LP or something.
Interesting.
Yeah, I'm looking at here, and they use Frax a lot, so that's kind of like the currency they use for the bonds and stuff like that. Frax has kind of been blown up lately too. I'm not sure if you guys follow that at all, but
well, we periodically need like a new Ponzi scheme to work on.
Lazerve's coming out though, like less Ponzi, less high APYs, but still Ponzi.
Like, it's like, yeah, if there's not like some sort of quasi Ponzi that opens up every like, you know, 1 month in crypto, then like something's gone wrong. But I have to see what all these things are. Yeah, King. Well, yeah, go ahead. Sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
It's Ponzi season.
Nah. It's
I don't know if you guys look into that project. It's on. I've only been joining the Pylon Gateway, the lossless IDO for Save, SAYVE.
Yeah, what's that?
It looks like a super interesting and meaningful project. It's kind of like they want to create like maybe a treasury or some sort of saving account. Service for actually educational saving account. So the coin, the tokenomics seems interesting because they're going to have buyback, they're going to have their own treasury. But they're also going to use that to bring in educational sort of institutions to join in and use the platform to access more like students. So they're going to probably grant them some access of the treasury. So they look super interesting. I just don't know if you guys know a bit more, because they also gave me a little bit of alpha. Like, I'll just try to ask some questions.
Here's what they're saying on the Pylon description. It's a savings and earning protocol built on the Terra blockchain. Provides AI-powered education, easily accessible education savings plan that competes with rising education costs. Okay. Yeah. Students not only save for college, but improve language skills and gain entrepreneurial experiences.
Yeah.
Building an ecosystem for K-12 blockchain users consists of a value-creating mechanism. Unique learn-to-earn allows users to better their language skills and earn extra savings rewards, which then enable across access to Terranaut Jumpstart for early entrepreneurship and experiences. So this is sort of like a learn-to-earn concept, and I don't know if they're trying to run it like a video game of some kind, almost like, imagine if you were playing like DeFi Kingdoms or something, and you're learning about economics, or I don't know what they're getting at here.
Yeah, it sounds still a bit broad for now. It seems like just want to if you want to earn save token, I think the only kind of game, or maybe they would do something similar to Duolingo, you know, to learn language. But there was just the other day I kind of tagged them, just want to ask them. So, what if it'd be interesting, like, you'll be able to sort of onboard different schools, and then they can have their own sort of like school-owned liquidity treasury, you know? And they said they're working on something like that and try to do some tests testing run with some like selected school or institution or educational institution. It just sounded more meaningful.
So, the economy of this thing is like all on chain, or I don't even know what it is, but
I'm not quite sure. That's why I'm like, maybe I'll just do the gateway and see how that goes.
Well, the problem with the gateway, we talked about this earlier today, is that it'd be nice if you can like deposit like Y Luna or like even just Luna to do this, because then you at least keep your Luna price exposure. The problem is when you have to put UST on those things, is it's like sort of if the project doesn't do well, then you just basically have like dead money sitting there for who knows how long.
Yeah.
It's like if you're like, let's say you put in a serious amount of money, you know, wouldn't you rather just have a clear cut appreciating asset instead, as opposed to like you being a quasi VC type of situation, like early investor. I get what they're trying to do. I think that once you can deposit different types of assets so that you can have like the price exposure of your choice, it's going to be much better. You see what I'm saying? Like, I could understand if I threw some Luna in there, my yield went to this. That way I still have Luna exposure. But getting my UST back after a year and a half, after like, you know, some level of inflation plus the fact that like my money wasn't really like, you know, like my asset wasn't growing. A lot of people are in crypto not to like, you know, invest in companies. They're there for the price action. So I think that Pylon is going to try to address that ultimately. So you can stay exposed to the price action you want while still be able to invest in some things. It'd be interesting.
But for this project particular, they're still very early on. So, I mean, I'm following it closely, and if I find any more stuff, I'll let you guys know.
Yeah, that the other thing too is like, do you know how much Pylon is actually like vetting these different projects? Like, how do we know like what the team is doing, and are they really building something, or is it like some kind of cash grab? Like, how do like you can make all sorts of little things sound cool, right? Like, but how do you know?
Yeah.
Like, the risk is you don't know that they're going to do anything, like execute, like, or straight up rug pull.
Yeah, Valkyrie has this problem too, where like they're sort of asking you to just like take a leap of faith on products that like you don't really know a lot about.
Yeah, like that seems to be like the problem on small projects.
It's like the launchpad phenomenon, but like, I guess you need to do that, but there's sort of an inherent flaw with that model, in my opinion.
Yeah, I need to create a launch pad, apparently. That's the way to get rich. Not the launch pad, but like I need to do a rug pull.
Do a rug launch.
Jumping out a rug
just
pull.
Literally called rug.
What's
launch.
That?
Pylon rug.
Rug launcher.
All the rug pull go by and everyone will buy.
Literally every single project on the platform will be an actual rug pull. And you just like just go in there expecting that. It's normal.
I love the coin all coins that are unverified that say like do not buy, and you can just see them start getting bought as soon as they come out.
That's hilarious. The unverified.
The reverse psychology.
Then they're literally called don't buy me and stuff.
That's so funny. So yeah, it's hilarious. Anyway, guys. Well, let's break for tonight, I think. It's getting a little bit late for me. But yeah, it's been a lot of fun. Hopefully. If you guys like learn some of the, like little technical trading kind of concepts and you want to ask more questions another time, that'd be fine. I've limited my like cadre of things I look at to a fairly narrow number of things that I think are fairly easy to learn now, quite frankly. And I exclude all the other garbage only because they don't work that good, not because I don't understand them or whatever. They're just not that interesting anymore. So the technical stuff on when I talk about like charts and things has gotten very, very limited now. To the things I think are most potentially predictive and least confusing. Okay, guys. All right. Well, have fun and try not to lose any money on too many rug pulls then. See you later.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, guys.
Thanks for checking out another episode of The Ether. That was a two-part CeFi space called Flipping Through the Charts with CeFi and Friends. Don't forget to check out Terra Space's first sponsor. We appreciate Orbital Command for giving us what we need to do the job more efficiently. Definitely give them a consideration when you're looking to delegate or redelegate your Luna. Find out more about Orbital Command at orbitalcommand.io. We appreciate their support. For TerraSpaces.org, I'm Finn. Thanks for listening.
Rolling down the street in my 6-4. I never had a 6-4. A kid can wish though. I snapped a wishbone and grabbed a fistful. Chilling with the dopey, this a weed is all I wish for. I'm feeling blissful. I got a missus. My ginger always down to ride no matter what the mission. I'm singing this song. Got a couple albums out. We do alright, but it ain't really shit to write home about. Like to feed the fishbowl. Keep my stories mystical. I like my beats boom bapping rap to be lyrical. I'm feeling cynical. Craving a little ritual. Save my place in line while I try to find a mirror. I keep looking and looking and looking, but never find nothing. We've been lied to, thinking this surprise under super secret lies. Motherfuckers sneak inside, going dark. Now believe me when I say this shit is do or die. Going dark, now believe me when I say this shit is do or die. Going dark, now believe me when I say this shit is do or die. Trenches, trying to stay offensive. Trespassing here like this land looks expensive. Ain't no time like the present. Trying to stake a claim, just make sure your claim stays away from all these other claims. We're almost kinda running out of land here. Living in the day of the dead and it's damn weird. Same teams, y'all, we just trying to get a bite to eat. A little rest saved up, waiting for my time to sleep. Head down, middle fingers up, yo, I'm wide awake. Never hesitate to stay about 100 miles away. 7 time and space, while the wrecking ball the place. I expect you all to play, running marathons today. When the sick get sicker and the rich get richer. It might be about time to rearrange our dinner. Fix the system, the shit, it's all nixed. Waking up early, gonna suck today's.
Hey, man. Time to suck today's right. Dick, that's what I'm talking
going
about.
Dark, now believe me when I say this shit is do or die.
Time to suck today's right. Dick, that's what I'm talking
going
about.
Dark, now believe me when I say this shit is do or die.
Clark's a great guy, man. He's totally gonna take care of Angela, man. He's great. He's a wonderful lab partner, so it's gonna be cool. We'll keep an eye on her.
Why don't you go fuck yourself, you weird little prick?
I'm a teacher, okay? You can't talk to me like that, guy.
I'm not a student, so I can say whatever the fuck I want.
Terra Spaces.